We are recording from Google for Startup Campus, Google's home for startups. We are now in their creator studio, a state-of-the-art video and podcast room available to startups for free. For more information on all things campus, check out their website, www.campus.co/Tel Aviv.
Welcome to Humus on Tech, the first podcast by Olim and for Olim interested in the Israeli high-tech industry.
We are Maggie and Kevin, and here today, they're joining us, Sivan and Barak, from Two Head Consulting. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for joining.
Hey, thanks for inviting us. Yeah.
Should we come out and, like, clap hands?
Yeah.
And welcome to our first episode of our second season. So
the premiere. Nice.
Yeah. So it's, well, we're super happy that you're here, and we cannot wait to hear your amazing story. Okay, so let's start by the, let's call it beginning. Where are you guys from?
Well, I was born in, no, just kidding. We are from Fairlawn, New Jersey, which is a nice little suburban town outside of New York, where the grass is always green and the sun always shines. And we made Aliyah, how long ago?
8 years ago.
Okay, let's clarify this. What's the relationship between each other?
Oh,
yeah,
we're not married.
It's the first time we have two guests on the same
episode. So it's a premiere and we're a special. Okay, so we're not married. Although
we're brother and sister.
We're brother and sister. Brother and sister who are not married. Yeah. People get really, they're like, ew. We're like, no, we're just brother and sister. Like, nah. Yeah, and I'm the older sister in case it was unclear.
But I'm the cooler brother, so.
Well, I'm not your brother, so yeah, you could be the cooler brother. That's fine.
Yeah, we love brother and sister fight here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, yeah, and you came here 8 years ago with your family?
Yeah, our whole family made Aliyah, my mom, and we have two other siblings who we don't work with, but but we still love them.
Okay.
And yeah. you Barak, you came when you were 15, right?
Yeah, I was in 10th grade in high school. Interesting experience.
Okay, so you had to do the army here?
Yeah, I did for 3 years. The last one to do for 3 years also.
Oh, well, wow, well, congratulations on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... So where did you guys relocate to?
We moved in the beginning to Jerusalem.
Okay, and how does the whole, you know, business get started?
Yeah, tell us more about the business for listeners who don't know you. Not unlike us, that we follow you on Instagram and we know
stalk our every business.
We stalk you all the time.
And I'm always, we are always discussing with Maggie, we should start doing video. Look at what these guys do.
And when you do, you too will become famous and be invited onto podcasts like this one.
So tell us, for the listeners who know, what's your business?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. No, it's not such a funny story. I feel like we need like our dating story. We actually did a thing together many, many years, like 10 years ago. We decided to run a marathon in honor. My father passed away and we wanted to raise money in his name for cancer research, for cancer, what's it called?
High Life Fund.
It's a cancer
fund
for kids,
right.
And so we needed to raise some money and we didn't really know what to do. So I don't even remember why I had this idea, but I've always loved making videos and I had a lot of home footage all over the house. And I just made in like one night this like little video to say like why we were running the marathon and explain our story a little bit. This was way before you could upload natively to Facebook.
Was way before there was cameras on your phone.
Yeah, so. I had a video camera that was like grainy footage. Like, I didn't understand how YouTube worked. So I uploaded the link and then I like emailed everybody the video. It was very unclear. So I just emailed it to a few people in our synagogue. And the video got thousands of views and we raised over $30,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Which was
we ended up becoming the top fundraisers that year.
But it was like a shock because I think we needed 5,000 in order to get
to go
in order to be able to go because you had to like fundraise in order for your ticket. And then we were like, wow, $1,000. Wow. $2,000. We're like, holy crap. Who is donating this money? But I think it was a really powerful experience for two reasons. One, it showed us how powerful video was. And I think that's something that we run our whole company on that concept of like, look how much you can achieve with people who don't even know you and are willing to give you money. I mean, sure, it's a sad story, but you know, you hear lots of sad. Yeah. No, I think in all fairness, you hear lots of sad stories. What made it so impactful was the video element. And it also showed us that we could work together more or less without killing each other. So that was really impressive. We did run the marathon. We survived. More or less. Mm-hmm. And
there was a lot of crying during
there was
the
a lot of crying. We had to train. I cried a lot.
5 o'clock in
guess,
the morning.
I guess you have that taped on video also.
We do have that video. It's still on YouTube, although I don't really like to share it just because I didn't understand how to upload, so it's like a really tiny square inside of like the YouTube. It wasn't exactly my but it's a very impactful video. It is very it also makes people cry, so I don't show it. I don't just like, you know, show it at parties. But but then was it last year?
Yeah.
He got out of the army.
Oh, so this is like pretty new.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been working.
A year and a half ago.
Well, Barack just got out of the army a year ago. So
plot twist. We have a Hayal here with us.
And he got married, so he's been super busy. I worked at a production company for a couple years, and I was like a partner there. And then we decided to join forces and take over the world. But we just weren't sure what to do. So we brainstormed a little bit, and then we just kept testing out things until we
decided to go back to videos. Do it that way.
We actually started off because we felt so strongly that Olim here are really at a disadvantage, and that the pool of, you know, kind of the businesses that they can run or the access to things that they have is really limited. And we kind of wanted to change that. And we kind of wanted to create, it was like an app. You wanted to create an app.
That was going to help pretty much Olim Chadashim become one with Israel.
So that was a failure.
Right.
Mostly because we realized that actually Olim didn't want to become one with Israel.
Yeah. Actually, that's true.
Right. Although I think that's fair.
What do you mean? That we want to keep being Olim and not integrating into the community?
I think this is actually a really good example of a startup of like the MVP model of like testing things out and then being like, oh, fail quickly. Excellent. We assumed that you come to Israel and you want to be Israeli and you want to work with Israelis.
And you
want to
live the Israeli life and you
want
to...
Right.
And spoiler alert, we do not want
that.
We do
not, right.
Yeah.
Plot twist. and I think that was really eye-opening. We had just kind of like, we're testing out our theories and doing a little bit of work.
And we tested it out in like a bunch of different ways also. If it was business-wise or just family-wise or just... Nobody wants to.
Okay. But that was super eye-opening, right? I think that made us realize, like, first of all, you can't give people what they don't want. That's kind of dumb. But also that there is so much space for making this country better in a sense that I think as Olim, we bring a lot of stuff that isn't here. And I think instead of saying you have to become Israeli, why not say there's so much beauty in this country that we can take, but also bring our own elements as Olim and what do we bring to the table? And that's basically like when we started our company, that's the perspective that we had.
So that's how you started doing video 10 years ago. But what about Two Heads? What are you actually doing now? And how did you start it again, like recently?
That is a very good question.
Well, our elevator pitch.
Let's hear it. Let's hear it.
He makes me practice this. I was like, what's our elevator pitch?
Let's hear it.
We help you build influence, build brand influence through video content. Super simple, super easy, and that's all what it's about. And what companies really want nowadays is they want that brand influence because they want that brand loyalty. In America, it's a concept that is already existing for a lot of years where Apple users use everything that has to do with Apple. They're very loyal to the brand. If you buy an iPhone, you won't necessarily go and buy a Samsung watch. You'll buy an Apple watch and you'll because they're very loyal to the brands. In Israel, you have one guy who's selling you a hammer, and he's the only guy in Israel selling you a hammer. So there's no sense of loyalty or anything like that. And people are really trying to build that brand influence and kind of have their customers be more loyal to them. And the fastest and best way to do that is video content.
And I think there's an understanding, slowly, that ads don't really work anymore in the sense that nobody really wants to watch an ad. And now it's all about value and engagement. And again, these are things that we're bringing awareness to the Israeli community. So it's been really incredible to watch the educational process take place. But video is the most powerful medium out there, for sure. I mean, they say, picture is worth 1,000 words. A video is worth like 18 million, I think.
depends on the length, right?
Right. But what's changed is the way that we want to consume content. So companies, I think, are still in the old school way of like, oh, I need to spend $500 million on a beautiful ad. But now you need every day to be creating videos that are relevant and engaging to your audience because they need to trust you and they need to develop a relationship with you. Because when it comes to buying something, it's not going to be that they saw an ad and then decided to buy it. They're really smart and they're savvy and they want to interact with you in a different way. And so companies that before could get away with, you know, running a Facebook ad now are realizing, oh, I need to up my game a little bit. So because everybody knows they need video, but nobody really knows what that means, we basically created a company where we teach you what that means, and then we basically train you to establish yourselves as brand leaders through video content.
So what would be the three top pieces of advice that you would give someone who's building their own startup or their own like medium to, you know, small business, and they want to start exploring video content?
I would say number one is stop taking yourself so seriously. Nobody's watching, so just go for it. And it's never too early to start. So if you can develop a personal brand, your company will have a much easier time getting funding. You know, we like to think that startups work differently than reality, in that people like make logical decisions, but actually they make emotional decisions. So if you want that meeting with that VC, or you want people to download your app, then you need to be engaging with them way before you try to sell them something. Okay. And you need to, yeah.
That's great pieces of advice. I'm sure like everyone's going to be like,
taking notes. Yeah. You would think that they'd listen, but I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm talking to myself.
We were listening. That's why we invited you.
When you both started now working on Two Heads, you also use this kind of technique, like to be thought leaders, you also use video to market your videos. Services, right?
So meta.
So you started some time ago posting every week one video. How did...
Yeah, we started about last October. We decided one thing that we're not going to ever not do is post a video every week. So we're always going to have one video a week. We don't run any ads. We don't talk about our business. Like, nobody actually has any idea what we do until they contact us. And it's really interesting to see how through this video content, people really think that we're their best friends, kind of. And I mean, Sivan, she gets thousands of messages weekly, just like, oh, hi. Oh, hi. And then it's like, and you know, even me, when I'm not the one on videos, I get messages on LinkedIn and Facebook all the time, and people are just talking to me and asking for advice. And that's really what the video content is about. And, you know, in the end, they turn into clients, which has really been this, like, amazing learning process.
It was really by accident. We did not, this was definitely not, like, a smart, intentional sales funnel. We were just like, okay, we don't know what to do. So all I know how to do is create videos. So we're just going to create one video every week about something that's relevant to our audience.
For free.
For free. And we're just going to post it and see what happens. And here we are.
So when was the tipping point? When did you start feeling, hey, I'm not posting something that only...
only
our
my
family
mom
is watching.
Yeah.
People
thanks,
are
mom.
Actually consuming this and finding it valuable. When was the tipping point?
Actually, I think it's a little bit surprising, but I don't think we noticed until the summertime, where we took like a 2-week vacation, and then someone had messaged us like, "Guys, I've been waiting for your video.
Are you okay?
Are you okay?" And that was like the first time that we're like, "Oh, people are actually waiting for us to post our videos on Wednesday." And before that, I don't even think that we understood and like noticed that that's what was happening. We understood that there was engagement and people were watching and this, but we didn't understand how much deeply connected they really felt to the whole process, which was really interesting to see. And it was like 7 months after we've been posting every single week.
But I do think that from the first month we got, I actually got a message. This woman called me and she had somebody who had commented very negatively on one of my videos one time and told me my voice was nasally and I had a terrible personality. It was really nice.
And you put feminism back a thousand years.
And I put feminism back a thousand years. It was really intense. She called me and she said, okay, what do you do? And I said, what do you mean? And she's like, well, can I pay you to do what you're doing for yourself, for me? And I was like, we have a go. Yeah. And I looked at Brock. I said, Brock, what do we do? Like, we didn't even know at that point what we were offering, what our product was, but she basically told us what our product was and what she needed. And we said, oh, okay, well, this is what we charge. And she said, okay, great. When do we start?
Wow, that's the best customer discovery that you can make.
That was wild. So now we always can tell when somebody comes from a word-of-mouth referral, they're always very suspicious, like, okay, can I get some customer references or, you know,
but
what
the ones
do you
who,
do?
Like, watch our videos and actually follow us, they're always like, take my money.
Right. They already know the value.
And we try to explain
this
to, like, our clients, like, just give it a couple months and people will literally, like, I don't know how, why. I don't know how to explain it, but, like, this woman was like, can I pay you to do this thing for me? And I was like, yes, yes, you can. And it happens over and over again.
So. And now you went to the States, right? Like a business trip?
Like a real business
trip. Like
no, wait, I mean, I just want to take a moment. Since I was a child, that has been my dream, is to go on a business trip.
Both our dreams.
And we did it. We went on a visit. It was my first trip without my kids. But it was really, it was very cool. We had an amazing time and we were tired all the time.
Where did you go?
To Chicago, to a cool SaaS company in Chicago.
Nice.
Like until now, all the clients were Israeli companies. Targeting American or
international? They were our first international client.
We didn't know them.
Big deal. We didn't know them. They were very happy to have us.
They were like, hey, we want to hire you. We're like, who are you? So we're like, is this a joke?
Yeah, they brought someone from Israel to generate content, like to explain them how to produce this, right?
No, we flew to... Oh, yeah, we flew to America to do it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They brought... Oh, we're the ones from Israel. Yeah. I was like, what?
No.
Right. I forgot we're from Israel. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, they brought, right. And I think that was also like really flattering, was like, there's so many people in America. Why bring us? And I asked my mom if she set them up, and she said no, she didn't. She didn't set it up. yeah, it was really cool.
Right, and they were our client for our accelerator, where we pretty much go in and train their team in how to create video content on their own. Because, you know, video content can be very expensive, and to have someone who's creating the video content for you all the time isn't necessarily the best business model. So that's what we did with them.
So a lot of companies in-house now, right. And we trained them in what to do, and it was...
So you also offer training?
Most of the companies that we work with up till now have been, they kind of like know that they need to start with video, but a production company is very expensive. So we go in.
That's usually also what we suggest to them, because... Right. It's really the most relevant. If you can create video content on your own for your business, that's the best.
Right.
So financially, it makes a lot of sense. And then we train their marketing team how to become self-sufficient.
And how would you say it's like when you understand that you have your audience engaged? What are like the red or the green flags in this case that you're like, okay.
Green flags.
Yeah. This is a good start.
I'll tell you what I think. For me, it's just been this month. We have been doing this for 8 months, and we have been saying... Post video just to our like local audience, like post videos and
for
tag
11
us in
months,
the,
just
for 11
so.
Months. Okay, 11 months. There you go. He's the mathematician. And we're like, just post, create any type of video, post it and tag us. And like every once in a while, like every couple months, somebody would post a video and tag us. And this month, it's like 10 people who they have been the most resistant. Like we have a Facebook group for entrepreneurs, and they've been like, I don't know, it's not for me.
No,
it's
it doesn't not, work.
Doesn't work.
If it's not
this month, like 10 people started posting video content and they tagged us, and I was like, they heard us.
Yay.
They were paying attention. So I think when people take action, that is the biggest. People can like, they can comment. When somebody does what you've told them to do and then like shares it with you, that's like a whole other level. Like that's, you know, so that's a big green flag.
And in all this success story, because it's a really nice success story, what were the challenges, the main challenges that you faced? And the war story is not talking about the army, but like...
His back hurts yeah. all the time.
what were the biggest challenges or fears that you had?
Well, I just want to be clear that I think success is a really scary term. I wouldn't say that we're successful because we've reached some sort of peak. I think we're successful because we've just decided we're going to do it. And I think you could be successful even when you have no clients and no money and you rent an office at WeWork and you don't know how you're going to pay for it. True story. But I think that success is like having the guts to not be afraid or do it even if you are afraid. So I don't want to be like, oh, we're a success story, because I still cry like on the daily. I'm like, what are we doing? But yeah, what's why don't you share some of our
what's a war
deep
story?
Dark secrets?
well,
last
a war
week.
Story. no, there are a lot of struggles in opening up a business, especially in Israel. I mean, it's like in America, if you open up a business, so they kind of like pave a nice highway for you to just drive on it, kind of. So in Israel, they kind of pave that nice highway and then build like 50 meter walls.
throw flaming
and throw like flaming
at
arrows
you.
And rocks and all different
so
kinds
like,
of shit.
Oh, you want to pay your taxes? Too bad.
Yeah. Like every possible thing that they can try and block you on the way of creating your business, they will do. Which is incredible.
Congratulations, Israel, you win.
Right. But once you pass all those things, then it can be like a really nice, you know, on the beach kind of thing.
Really? Have we experienced on
no,
the
we
beach?
Haven't experienced
no, we're
that
not
yet.
Experiencing but, on the beach. There's been no beach time.
But no, there are a lot of struggles on the way. I mean, Sivan used to text me like 10 o'clock at night, every single night. I'm not even kidding. Every single night. Barak, what are we doing? We can't do this.
Giant mistake.
We made a giant mistake. We can't do this. And what we realized was, and what we tell a lot of people also, a lot of entrepreneurs who talk to us, what we realized was it's really hard to do this on your own. And if you don't have someone who's kind of, you know...
Answering at 10 p.m.
answering at 10 p.m. and making sure that everything's okay and you can actually do this, then it's really, really hard. And it's better to just be really hard with another person than... And that's what we figured out. So right. If you go into business, guys,
do it with your brother.
Find a partner yeah. that you can trust.
Yeah, we can think, also yeah. share that part of the story. I think like also if it was for us, we would have never had the guts to do it solo. Yeah,
I think when we recorded the first episode and we edited it and it was ready to be released, if it was on my own, I wouldn't have released it. Like I asked Maggie, should we release it? Isn't it weird? It's It's us. We are talking over
and
mic.
And I think there's such like such a magic when it's two because like you're both afraid. But the moment like the other person like is the one that is afraid, the like the other person instantly needs to be the one that's like supportive.
We have
right?
times where like, okay, you can panic today, but I get tomorrow.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah, there's like you're just always being up roles. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's why I think actually being in Ola has really made me feel connected to a community. And I actually think in America, I was talking to some friends who also opened their own companies and they felt like really like there was no community. But I think in some ways being aliens here has brought us together in a really real way. And there is a lot of opportunity for finding a community that can support you. And I think people should utilize that. Like, I think, again, like Brock said, if it wasn't for having somebody who always said, you can do this, it's going to be okay, I would just be like, okay, guys, I can't do this, it's not going to be okay, and find me in a ditch somewhere.
So, right. So that's why we decided to start working on a different concept with integrating the Israeli conference with English speakers as well. And hopefully that will be a success in December.
So tell us more about this conference first.
No, go. Oh, okay, so the conference is Next Case. It's the biggest digital marketing conference in Israel for Hebrew speakers. They only show case studies in the conference. So for marketing people and stuff like that, it's very actionable. They can come and look, oh, okay, so this is what Google did or this is what Facebook did for different marketing tactics. And they can really take that away and try to implement it themselves in their business. So this year, Sivan and I coordinated with them and partnered with them to bring in English speakers and have the English community be a part of that and hopefully start integrating that way.
A whole English track, right? I mean,
it's a whole English track.
It's kind of an old conference with a new track. It's like a new conference for English
speakers.
Well,
originally they said, oh, we'll make a whole new conference. And we said, no, no, we want it to be that the conference is in the same place at the same time, the networking, all of the parts like, you know, people are eating and hanging out and the booths, those are all available to everyone because I think that gives people a chance to interact with circles of people or networks that they don't have access to as English speakers. And most Israelis speak English well enough that you can communicate. Most Americans or English speakers can, you know, rile it up and get some Hebrew. And I think having that context of like, okay, the speakers are in English, but you have an opportunity to network with people from bigger companies that you don't have access to, you know, in your small Olim network, I think that's really big. So, yeah, it's a whole track. It's the first year that they're doing it, so we don't want to let them down. So if you're an English speaker, please come just so that they do it again next year.
It's all about marketing and marketing cases, like actual
content. And the English-speaking track is specifically going to be for companies and startups that are trying to market internationally. So,
wow. Okay. So, really so remind us the date and where is it taking place?
Okay. It's December 11th, Lago Rishon LeZion.
Okay,
it's
great.
It's a very nice
hall. It's a beautiful
chef
food.
Lunch, free massages.
That's why we went. We were like, massages and lunch. But it was we were really impressed with the level of the conference. And we actually approached them at the end and we were like, okay, we were super impressed. Can we do this in English now? And we felt like we wanted the same opportunities for English speakers. Why not have a conference that was so incredible like this? In the same context, so
we'll make sure to post the links on our page and on the episode
and send you a lot of English speakers so you keep on doing this forever.
Yeah, that's what we really want. It's like the only benefit we get is that there's something really a lasting impression of there is a way for people to integrate, and even if it's starting at a marketing conference, like that's big. And I think people are really scared, and it's terrifying to step out of your comfort zone. But here, we've created the whole context for you. You just have to show up and eat lunch, you know? Like,
and something that we feel really strongly about because, you know, technically we could just focus our whole business on American clients and clients in America who have a better understanding of video content and are really ready to, you know, pay money for those things. But we feel really strongly in having a successful business in Israel, which is and why we're doing all those different things.
Also, I think something that's really scary is to fail. I feel like we fail all the time, but we just don't look at it like failing. We're just like, oh, this isn't working. This is something that people might be embarrassed by, but I think I say this with like a lot of pride. He spent 4 years building this prototype for what he wanted, this app that he wanted to create. And within a few months of testing, realized like, oh, no, this isn't going to work. People don't want this. It's too complicated. There's no business model. And instead of being like, oh, well, that was a failure, he was like, okay, so what do we do now?
Right, and we see it really often. Like, a lot of people, they'll build their startup and they'll create this, like, amazing product. more in Israel than in Silicon Valley, but they'll create this amazing product that nobody actually wants or isn't actually useful to anybody.
Or they just never test it out.
Or they just never test it out. I mean, we had a meeting once with a startup where they did market research in a different country for then the country that they were selling their product to, which was really interesting.
They were like, can you help us? I was like, I don't think so. This is a confusing product.
And failure is really, I mean, as someone who's gone through so many different lifestyles in my short life. I mean, I'm only 23, but I've lived in America, gone to, you know, private Jewish school in America, moved to Israel, gone to high school without speaking Hebrew, which is
definitely
an experience everyone should do. Joined the army, and then, you know, all these different things, and you fail in a lot of things on the way, and you just have to be like, okay, great, I failed. Why did I fail? Look at it, kind of take the analytics from the failure and move on to your next project that's not going to be a failure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Something I've been thinking like for the past weeks, I come back from home. Sometimes I say, oh, I failed at work. Like I did this wrong and I had this failure. And then I start to see that all the failures that I'm having, they are all new failures. And like the good thing is I'm not repeating the same mistakes. So Everything is a new mistake. Which means that you're learning.
Yeah, you're learning. That's huge. Yeah,
and it's wonderful when you realize, okay, I'm still making mistakes, but I'm learning. I'm not making the same mistake twice.
Also, you know, making mistakes is something that happens every time you do something new. I mean, you're never expected to like know exactly what you're doing when you're like coming into a new project.
Right. Yeah.
I think
and that's
do.
The problem. People think that they are being expected to do everything without a single mistake, which is a problem. I mean, even today we had a team meeting and
we hired our first new employee, and
she was saying that one of her biggest concerns was that she didn't want to disappoint us, and I told her that disappointing isn't something that should even concern you, because if you disappoint us, that's okay, but as long as you learn from the disappointment, it will turn into us being proud of you that you learned from the disappointment. And because disappointing is 1 second. You know, there's 1 second of disappointment, but you can always fix that and you can always move on and you can always do better afterwards.
We still make a ton of mistakes.
And that's what we really believe in, right?
Yeah.
And making mistakes is the fun part.
That's
you
the
get
fun
part.
And then we're like, oh,
it,
okay, so how do we, I mean, I just sent out an email to a bunch of CMOs, but I copied and pasted the whole email because it was like for each one was the same thing. But I had written one line in the first email that was only meant for the one CMO. And I basically said like, oh, I know that you're nervous about being on camera, but don't worry. And one of them messaged back, I'm not nervous about being on camera. I was like,
Worked for the better.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely caught his attention. Yeah. You were like, this
like, you read that? Oh, it's again, delete. So everyone makes mistakes. And I think it's just, and that's why I really think like having a team, I think this podcast is awesome because I think it's giving people a look at, it's not a failure or a success. It's just a process. Like everyone's in a process, you know? And that's the end of the day. We're just all in a process.
And we can share it and show people everyone's process and kind of learn from their processes. And
that's the coolest thing I think about social media is it's really opened it up to people allowing themselves to share things that before felt like taboo. And now it's like, oh, yes, that was a huge mess up. And here it is on my Instagram story. Yeah. But I think that being honest about it in some ways makes other people willing to even try. If they see that you're trying and failing, but they still think you're cool, then maybe they'll also try and be okay to fail.
Right. I mean, even our first videos, if you go into our YouTube.
Oh, God, I'm horrified.
If you go into our YouTube channel, like our first videos are super strange, kind of weird.
My sweater choices were not so excellent, but okay.
We're talking about Starbucks and weird shit like that, but we did it, and look where you are now.
I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Your customers are businesses, right? What kind of advice would you give someone, Ole or Ola Hadasha, looking for a job here in the Israeli market? And what takeaways can we bring from video and from your experience creating content?
Well, I think two things. One is you have to stop being afraid. I would say I speak Hebrew okay. I understand almost everything. But one of the things that I forced myself to do last year was to go to Israeli conferences where I did not feel comfortable and network with people that I did not feel comfortable networking with because my personality is not funny in Hebrew. I just sound like an angry school teacher. I had friends tell me in like college, I went to a university here and they were like, I know you don't mean to be mean, but it just sounds really aggressive when you talk in Hebrew because I don't have flowery language. But I forced myself to go and I met the, you know, the event coordinator of Next Case, which we're running now. Like, that was huge that I approached him and I said, like, hello in my awkward Hebrew. And I was like, I want to do this. So you just have to get out of your comfort zone. And if you keep networking with the same five people, it's not going to work. So don't be scared. Israelis might seem a little bit scary on the outside, but they're okay once you get to know. Don't be scared. And in terms of creating content, like, put value out even before you're job searching. Put value out even, you know, before you know what kind of job you want. Because if you can get people to recognize you when you walk into the office for that interview, your chances of getting hired are so much better. I mean, I've had interviews at so many different companies, and I asked every single time I got, I said, can you tell me why you asked me in? I mean, obviously, like, you read my CV and you thought it was relevant, but why did you bring me in? And they said, well, your resume stood out. What did my resume stand out? It's because I used a graphic design template I found on Canva. It was an orange paper. Like, it just looked different. But what I realized was, oh, people weren't making, like, these rational decisions of, like, she looks well-versed in video. It was like, oh, hey, her CV stands out. Let me read it. So use that psychology to your advantage. People aren't necessarily always thinking logically, but if you can emotionally connect with them. So if you want to go into tech, like, start doing research on trends and post videos about stuff that's trending in your industry. Or, you know, if you're interested in a certain job, then do a lot of research on that company and, like, start talking about it in videos. People will notice. I promise you they'll notice. And your chances of getting the job are much, much better.
Cool piece of advice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
But definitely the biggest thing is just do it.
Just
like,
do it.
If you don't
Nike. Yeah.
If you don't just do it, then
right. Yeah, like, I think just do it and be consistent with it, right?
Yeah.
Consistency. Wait for our video this week.
Oh, it's all about consistency.
Consistent.
The formula for
secret formula
for success.
Not so secret formula.
Yeah.
Very public formula. Yeah.
So I think it's time to, like, wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, we have the tradition for the Hebrew word for day, which is your favorite Hebrew word and why. And in this case, we have two people. So we have two Hebrew words of the day, which is pretty amazing for us. So what is your favorite Hebrew word and why?
My favorite Hebrew word is butz.
Butz?
Butz.
Mud.
Butz is mud or black coffee, Turkish coffee. When my grandfather made Aliyah 2 years ago to Israel, so that's one of the words I taught him. And I would say, Grandpa, when we go to sit at a cafe house, let's order cafe butz. And he had the most trouble in the world saying butz. It would come out boots, butts, beats, anything but butz. So in my opinion, that's my favorite word.
That's
I don't know
word.
Why, but it always makes me laugh. So
that's a good word.
Nice and good word.
I think my favorite word is yalla. Because it could just literally be used in any sentence. It's like, yala, or like, yala, or like any.
Ya'ala.
Ya'ala, like, yala balaga. You know, I don't know, just so many, depending on your emotional inflection. So I think it's a very nice, actually, I don't even know if it's Israeli, if it's a Hebrew word.
I think it's actually Arabic.
I think it's actually Arabic, so awkward.
But it's okay, we use it here
okay,
anyway.
Great.
We adopted.
Yala.
Yala. You see, that's exactly what we mean with the word, yala. It's okay, we'll take
it. It's the best word, it's true.
So thank you very much for joining us today. Thanks, thank you so much for coming in. Thanks to everyone who has been listening to us. So please don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter at humusandtech.com.
And clearly join us in all our social media networks by following us on Instagram at humusandtech, also on Facebook, and clearly subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and give us a 5-star rating.
Yeah.
Be kind to us. We love you.
Bye. Ooh, oh.